Okay, so let's continue now in Melachim Aleph, Perek Vav. Vayehi b'shmonim shana v'arba me'oshana. V'seis b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. So we're always looking and counting from the time in which the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. Chodesh Nisan, which will be entering in next week, the month of Nisan is considered to be the first of months. Also, when it comes to a king, when he is considered to be a king. So, how long has it been since we left Mitzrayim? Shmoinim shana ve'arba me'oshana. 480 years. Now, some people will look at that and say, wow, that's a pretty long time. And in fact, some people say that the reason why this is mentioned over here is actually some level of a criticism of the Jewish people, that it took them so long for the Beis HaMikdash to be built. Well, we know that David couldn't have it built, and Shlomo had it built, but that's why some people say, if we continue this pasuk on page 50, B'shana HaRevius, that it was in his fourth year. Why did it have to take him 4 years to have to start building Beis HaMikdash? He knew that he was the one who was supposed to build it. So some again people say it's a criticism on Shlomo, even though he had a lot of other tasks that he had to do, as we saw. But nonetheless, some people say it in that fashion. Some also explain that if we would have demanded the Beis HaMikdash earlier, then the Beis HaMikdash could have been built earlier. The fact that, okay, fine, David wasn't fit, but sometimes our leader shows the type of people that he is leading. And therefore, if the people would have been more focused on, we need a Beis HaMikdash, we need a center to be able to serve Hashem, then perhaps the Beis HaMikdash could have been built earlier than it was. That's again how some people, the Ma'am Lois explains why it mentions the amount of time. Also, obviously, just for to put it into context of how long ago it was, that's when it was, 480 years from after we left Mitzrayim. Continues the Pasuk, it was B'chodesh Ziv, B'chodesh Hasheni. It was in the second month, which is Chodesh Ziv, which is translated over here in the English as in the month of Ziv. Doesn't really help us much. Rashi tells us, B'chodesh Ziv, who, you see on the top of page 50, Rashi says, B'chodesh Ziv, who Iyar. Now, it already tells us that it's HaChodesh HaSheni, it's the second month. So as we already know, since the first month is always calculated from the time in which we left Mitzrayim, which was the month of Nisan, so the month immediately after Nisan, the second month is the month of Iyar, right? You have Nisan, Iyar, then Sivan is the third month. So why is it called Chodesh Ziv? Well, why isn't it called the month of Iyar? It's because we didn't have those names at the time. If you look throughout the entire Torah, it does not mention anywhere any. It doesn't mention Tishrei or Elul. No. No. It says it talks about the in relationship to Mitzrayim on the first. For example, Rosh Hashanah is on the seventh month, right? And then Yom Kippur is on the 10th day of that month. But it doesn't actually say a name of these. An actual name, because the names that we're familiar with is something which came about later on, right? Didn't come out. Didn't exist then. So why is it called Chodesh Ziv? What does that mean? To say the Chodesh Hasheni. What is Ziv? So Ziv has to do with splendor. Also has to do with blossoming. Rashi says that it's Deisbe Ziva Leilone. It's a time in which trees begin to blossom. And therefore, that's the reason why it's given this particular name. So if you look also on the bottom, this is basically what it says. It says, since the months of the Jewish calendar are counted from Nisan, the month of Pesach, Ziv, is the second month. The word Ziv means brilliance or splendor. The month is called by this name because it is the time of year, puts in parentheses May, when the trees blossom. Right? What is the expression? April flowers bring May flowers, right? bring May flowers. So that's when trees blossom, right, in the month of May. So that's why it's called Ziv, which is ER time. Nisan is like April, right? Maybe not this year, right? Pesach is earlier. And the month of May is the month of ER. So Shlomo chose to begin the work then because the rainy season was over and the mortar would dry quicker. It wouldn't make sense to start building the base of Mikdash in November, right? And all of a sudden it's going to rain, it's going to be snowy or whatever it's going to be. It's going to be cold and the conditions aren't going to be good. So you start building the base of Mikdash in the springtime, the beginning of spring, a little after, right after Pesach time. And then you have the whole summer. Right. So I guess that's the reason why it says Chodesh Ziv is alluding to why he waited until that time as in a time in which it is nicer. It wasn't just a random month. It was because it was Chodesh Ziv, it was a beautiful time. Brilliance or splendor.
Isn't Ziv also flowing?
No.
Zion, what's with a base?
Base?
Yeah.
It's a flow. Light.
That's what, in this context, yes. Okay.
The Mishkan, when did the Mishkan, when did they start building the Mishkan?
Well, the Mishkan was there was a Mishkan all the way back, when Mishkan Shiloh, as we saw already in the days of...
When did Israel, upon leaving Israel, start building the Mishkan?
Oh. Good point. That's very true. That's a good point. It was during the same time, which makes sense. What? What do you mean?
The Truma was given and with this to be
taken. Oh, okay, right, because they had all the funds.
Here it says, "Hachodesh Hasheni leMeloch Shlomo al Yisrael." It looks like it's the second month that Shlomo was king of Israel. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was the second month. It was his second month of reign.
Right. I think it's really supposed to be going on the fourth year. B'Shana HaRevi'is, it was his fourth year, and in the fourth year, during that second month, which was the time which that he was a king, V'Yivin Abayis Hashem, that's when he built the Beis HaMikdash. And some people also emphasize that it's not just V'Yivin Habayis. He always mentioned that V'Yivin Habayis Hashem. It's one thing to build this beautiful structure to show off and to see how powerful I am, and you know, it's me, I'm the one that built the Beis HaMikdash, but that was not his motivation. He had no ulterior motives, he didn't do it to try to impress anyone, he was Lashem. He did everything with Shem Shemayim for the sake of God. That's how Shlomo acted. Now let's see a little bit about the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. V'Abayis Asher Bana HaMelech Shlomo LaHashem, and it keeps saying that the house in which the Beis HaMikdash which the king built for Hashem, was Shishim Amo Arko. Its length was 60 cubits, the Esrim Rachbo, and 20 cubits wide. A cubit is approximately 18 inches, and it's measured from the elbow to the tip of one's middle finger. So that's, for an average person, about 18 inches or so. And that's how people used to measure before there were feet and inches. People would know how big things are by their ruler, which was their hand. So they would measure things by their hand or by their hand breadth, by their fist. So that's how the Beis HaMikdash was measured as well in terms of amos. And therefore, just in practical context, we don't have an exact number, exactly how much it is. You can see in the English it's between 18 and 24 inches, is because obviously the height of a person is different. Maybe it's a little bit different then than it is now, or it's maybe even the same, but everyone is different. So to get the average, to get a specific measurement is very hard to be able to translate it into inches, which is a very exact going to the metric system. But anyway, in primitive times, that's how they would measure. So the Beis HaMikdash again was 20 amos wide, right? U'shloshim amos komaso, and its height was 30 amos. So you can just imagine the height where the roof was is about, let's pretend it's 24 inches. It means it's 60 feet high. That's how tall the Beis HaMikdash was. Okay, so it's a very large building, and just to understand the again the dimensions, let's call an Alma 2 feet for the sake of rounding up. So if it was 60 Amos length, so it was 120 feet was its length, and about 40 feet wide and 60 feet tall. So we look in the English over here, it tells us an important fact that the Mishkan, which was in the wilderness, was literally like a miniature Beis HaMikdash. Things that were constructed there were smaller than the way that the Beis HaMikdash looked. It wasn't the same size. After all, it had to be dismantled, it had to be taken apart and constantly put back together every time we traveled. And whenever we encamped, then we had to rebuild the Mishkan. So practically speaking, for it to be the same size as the Beis HaMikdash, it's just very difficult to do. If you look in the English over here, it says, the second paragraph, it says, the length and breadth of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, and its two sections were exactly double those of the Mishkan of the tabernacle. So the length and width were double the size of the Mishkan. Right, the tabernacle was 30 by 10, and the temple, moving to the next page, 51, was 60 by 20. So everything was doubled. The tabernacle's Kodesh HaKadoshim, which you can see on the, there's a picture on the bottom on page 51, the Holy of Holies in which the Aron was housed. The Holy Aron was housed there. That was 10 by 10. And in the Beis HaMikdash, 20 by 20. In the Mishkan's outer cell, which is the Kodesh, was 20 by 10. And the temple was 40 by 20. So you can see everything is doubled. The height, however, was different. The tabernacle was 10 cubits high, and the Beis HaMikdash was 30 high. So obviously it's a more permanent structure. So to build something 30 amos high is quite large. But to make even 10 amos, which is again almost 20 feet high, that was also pretty large. If you remember, the way that in the Mishkan they constructed it was through krushim. They had planks. They were all planks made out of acacia wood, and they would put one onto the other, and they had poles that would go through two on the top, on both sides, and two on the bottom, and there was a briach hatichon, a middle hole that went through all the planks. There was a hole through it, and the planks were 10 amos high, and that's how they structured the outer shell of the Mishkan. And that's, they would easily be able to dismantle it, take it apart. So that's what the Beis HaMikdash's dimensions were, as opposed to that of the Mishkan. Just again, since we're still on page 51, it's worthwhile also pointing out, which is in the English, that the Heichal, which is also known as the Kodesh, the Holies, which in order to get to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, you would have to go through the Kodesh and then ultimately into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Holy of Holies, again, where the Aron was housed, was a place where very infrequently would a person be able to go.
A person could only go
in, if you were the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. That was the one time during the Avodah that a person would go. Of course, the Gemara does say if there was like a crack in the wall, you can have your custodian go in there also. But other than that, that's the only time that anyone went into the Kodesh Kodashim. The Kodesh, in which there were other services, there was a Mizbeach, there was an altar in there, also the menorah, as well as the Shulchan, in which the showbread, the Lechem Aponim, were placed. And actually it says in the English over here that the showbreads were on the right, which was on the northern side, and the menorahs on the south, or the south side, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is west. That's the dimensions, the way it's shaped actually over here, the way the picture is exactly correct. Because looking at it like to the left would be the west, and the menorah was put on the bottom of this picture, which is the south. In fact, some people learn, the Gemara actually discusses this, that we daven toward the Kodesh HaKadoshim straight, which is, we daven east, or the question is, we daven due east. Basically, we daven toward the Kodesh HaKadoshim where the Aron was. And the a person sometimes may pray for certain things. A person wishes to pray for wealth, so instead of praying directly toward the Kodesh Kodashim, you can pray a little bit north, so that you're facing toward the Shulchan, the table which had the showbreads, the Lechem upon him, which represents affluence, food, wealth. Person who wishes for wisdom, then you should pray a little bit toward the menorah, toward the south, where the menorah was, which represents light, which is what wisdom is. The person's light bulb goes off, is the menorah, is the light. Let's just see one more pasuk, so then we'll understand a little bit more about what's going on over here. Pasuk Gimel. The ulam al pnei heichal habayis. There was this ulam, which the picture translates as a hall, which was by the Heichal, which was by the sanctuary, also the Kodesh of the Beis HaMikdash. Esrim Amma Arko, 20 cubits was its length, and 20 cubits was its length. And Al Pnei Rochav HaBayis, upon the width of the Beis HaMikdash. Esr Ba'Amma Rachbo, it was wide only 10 Amos, that was its width. Eser ba'amah rachbo al pnei habayis by the Beis HaMikdash. So if you look over here, which we're going to see one more pasuk and then we'll stop. If you look in the picture on page 51, the ulam is on the east side. In order to be able to get into the Kodesh, or the Heichal, the sanctuary, you have to go through the ulam, which is this hallway, in which some people explain, as the Abarbanel does, it compares the hall to the vestibule of a mansion where one prepares himself before entering the main room. You don't just jump right into the Kodesh. So the hallway, this ulam, was a way for the Kohen to be able to mentally prepare himself to enter into the Kodesh, to be able to do the service.
Is there a reason why it's white on the bottom of the ulam? It's not black.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to conclude by saying this one pasuk, and we'll stop after we see pasuk Dalet. V'yasla bayis chalone, the house of the Beis HaMikdash had windows, shetuvim atumim, windows which were open and windows which were, as Mesuzah Sion, atumim is setumim, closed. So windows which are open and windows which were closed. So Rashi tells us over here an interesting phenomenon about how one uses windows typically. So Rashi says, in Pasuk Dalet, Parish, the Gemara Menachos says, Shekuvim Losh Ri'iya. It's a language of being able to see through them, Basicha, that they're open. Ashkofa Psuchim Mibuchutz, Batumim Mibifnim. That it's open from the outside. This is what it was. The windows were larger or more open on the outside, and there were Tumim, they were more closed on the inside. Kitsar Mibifnim, they were less or shorter in the inside. Shlok derech shar chilonos acheros hasuyas lamaor, which is very strange, is the opposite way any person would normally have windows, which is for the purpose of light. We didn't need the light. So if you look at this picture on page 51, picture's worth a thousand words, as they say. So you look at this picture, the way it's done doesn't make any sense, because if this was your house, and there's a window, which is the white part, right? You would do the opposite, because you would have a large window on the inside and a small one on the outside, because the way is that a little bit of light from the outside can cast a tremendous amount of light inward. And therefore, why would you need a larger window on the outside? And the purpose was, so let's say, for example, for the sanctuary to get light. So if that would be the case, it would make more sense that you would have the smaller window on the outside, and then the light will shine this way, and to be able to hit the inner window, which is larger, so that people would be able to see more. Instead, what did they do? Very strange, the way he constructed it. The outer window was much larger, and which means that a lot of light would be cast up toward the north, right, of the Beis HaMikdash, but it's hitting a wall where there's nothing there except a thin alleyway, a thin hall, but it doesn't provide light for everything else, for the main sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash. So the question is, why was it done in this unusual way, that the smaller windows on the inside, right? So the answer is, as Rashi pointed out, that when it came to the Beis HaMikdash, it's not a typical house. Therefore, the light was not necessary to be shown in. And let's just conclude by reading this in the English, which is right next to the picture on page 51. It says, it's in order to show that the house of God did not need light from the outside. According to the Medrash, the windows were wide on the outside to symbolize that the outside world needed the sacred light of the temple, and not vice versa. Not that we need to enlighten the Torah, we need to educate that which the Beis HaMikdash represents, but we need to be enlightened by the Beis HaMikdash and Torah. Then we'll conclude with the last two points. The Malbim adds that although someone standing on the outside would see only wide windows, not knowing that they narrowed toward the inside, someone inside the sanctuary would realize that its light was that of God's presence, because it was obvious that the narrow opening could not let in so much light. According to the Vilna Gaon, the expression means that the windows had shutters, which enabled them to be either opened or closed. So the way the Pasuk, the way the Vilna Gaon, which is a very simple way of reading it, says that there were chelonim, there were windows which could be opened and closed, which means there were shutters that could open and close the windows. But according to this other reasoning, it gives us a little more of an insight that the Beis HaMikdash is something which is the Oro Shel Olam, gives us the eternal light, and that the light is not needed, but rather we need its light.